Monday, Michael Malice here with a fresh new week of Nightshade for you to scare children with. Our top story tonight, over the weekend, I was in Mordor, Washington, D.C. for one night only, emceeing a night for freedom. It's impossible for me to remember if it's a night of freedom or a night for freedom. It's a night for freedom. They played 20 minutes of Cernovich's upcoming movie, Blood Money. I just had watched Hoaxed, and I thought it was just absolutely great. And what I thought it was, and you'll know I think it's great, because otherwise I would have kept my mouth shut. What I really liked about it is they brought receipts. So rather than having it be this, like, poor Trump is getting the short end of the sticks. They barely talk about Trump. The movie's about the media, how the media manipulates information. And most important, a lot of times you'll hear people like, oh, Fox News, or you'll hear like, oh, the leftist media. And it's like, if they're doing these things that you accuse them of doing all the time, show the clips. It shouldn't be that hard. If this is something that they're constantly doing, show me the fucking clips and I'll be able to judge for myself. And they did. So the whole film, most importantly for me, was when they were talking about how the corporate press loves war and bangs the war drums constantly. Let's get us into war. Let's get that war frenzy whipped up among the masses. And they just show them, like, all the time. Like, we got to go to war. We got to go to war. We got to go to war. So that was very revelatory. They also had plenty of people from the left on. There was this great moment. I think this is the moment that most people think of regarding the film, where they're like, wow, this is kind of interesting. There was a guy from Black Lives Matter. He was the one who had been called up on stage at a Trump rally or a pro-life rally, I don't remember which one it was, and given time to speak. And everyone got along, very, very well. And he was talking about Dylann Roof shooting up a church. And the producers asked him, well, how come you haven't heard this one story? I believe it was Tennessee, I could be wrong, of this black guy who shot up a church, and it was white people. And he's like, what are you talking about? And they showed him the receipts. They showed him the footage. And he just stood there. He's like, wow, why have I not heard about this? And there wasn't, what was shocking to me and very pleasantly surprised, there wasn't this knee-jerk protect the narrative, well, this is blah, 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 hand-waving away. No. He took this information, engaged with it, and, you know, he's tried to process it. And that's the difference between someone who is, I'd say, tribalist, and someone who you can talk to, regardless of whether they're ostensibly on the right or ostensibly on the left. I said last week about Van Jones, the communists are often easier to talk to because they're under no misconceptions that the corporate press gets the story wrong intentionally, and often so. So if you give them new information, they'll the ones who be like, all right, let me actually look at this for a second. And that's exactly what he did. Not that I'm calling him communist, of course. So here's what I found very, very interesting. I was MC. I hosted a few panels. They were all a lot of fun. Everyone, my favorite was the, there was a panel on social media. I finally got to meet Austin Fletcher, Fleckas, on Twitter. If you don't follow him, you really should. Fleccas. He's a great guy. We had a panel, the last panel, about social media and about censorship and alternatives. And the panel was Robert Barnes, who's Barnes Law. He's an attorney. We had Will Chamberlain, who had just recently bought Human Events. Last week it was announced. And Raheem Kassam is now going to be the head of it. And a couple of other people. And the issue on the table is, all right, you know, Twitter and banning conservatives and all this other stuff. What is your answer to this? And not only here were the things that they talked about, and it was just cartoonish to me as an example of my adage that conservatism is progressivism driving the speed limit. And I did not want to argue with them because that wasn't my role as the MC, and nor were they coming from a knee-jerk place. You know, these guys were very informed. First of all, Will Chamberlain, love him to death, but he's like, well, things change when something becomes, you know, a natural monopoly. And it's like, okay, what does that mean? It just means a company that's big that you don't like. Natural monopoly. A natural monopoly, even theoretically, is a company that is so much better than its competitors that everyone wants to deal with them. Isn't that great? Isn't the point being that this company is so much better than everybody else that it's just like, wow, I want to have my business with this company? So that's number one. Number two is, how in the fuck is Twitter, what does Twitter have a monopoly on, natural or unnatural? 280 character blog posts? What does that even mean, natural monopoly? Like, I can understand, okay, there's this one farmer and he's got this land and it's got the world's only uranium, so he's got a monopoly on uranium. Okay, Twitter? I mean, there's nothing even theoretically it has a monopoly on. If Twitter vanished tomorrow, communication at worst between people would be inconvenienced. At worst. So that to me was completely insane. But more importantly than me disagreeing, all the arguments everyone was putting forward were ideas that were invented and championed by progressives. Natural monopoly is a progressive idea, that monopolies get too big, they have to be regulated. Then Will brought up, he goes, look, you could have this ultra-libertarian position, but you need things like discrimination laws, because otherwise you're going to have Jim Crow. Now, I didn't point out that Jim Crow was mandated racism. It was the government forcing you to discriminate, number one. Number two is, even whether you agree with him or not, discrimination laws are a progressive idea that the conservatives are not championing. And lastly, Robert Barnes, bright guy, educated guy, I'm not going toe to him about the law. He brought up this story that I wasn't familiar with, that there was some town and the oil company, you know, this 1910, bought the whole town. And because it owned the whole town, basically the government construed this as a violation of free speech rights, because if they own your whole town, you don't really have the freedom to speak. Okay, I could wrap my head around that in a legal issue. That's separate. How is Twitter analogous to that? It is easier for me to leave Twitter than it is to leave my home. Literally, I'm off Twitter. I'm still in the studio. It is easy, and the idea that it's like a town. Like, people have been kicked off of Twitter. It sucks for them. I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm saying that something should be fought. The idea that somehow they are the same as being homeless and kicked out of their town where they live is not analogous, legally or literally, or in any other sense of the word. It's not like Twitter has control of the entire internet. It's one site. And no matter how, and what percent of people have never been on Twitter in America? To call it a monopoly to me makes no sense. So I'm, of course, a big fan of putting these people on blast legally and calling them frauds, because they're saying one thing and acting another way and they're getting legal protections. That's a separate issue. But again, that argument that, oh, if a company owns your house, that violates your First Amendment, that's also a progressive idea. So literally every single idea that they put forward. Oh, and then the argument was, well, people should be protected for, and I asked them, I go, would you have a problem with Twitter if Twitter said, or any company, we are here to promote left-wing ideas? Would anyone have an issue? And conservatives are not welcome, or any other right-wingers, you're not welcome here. Would anyone have a problem with that? It's basically bake the cake. And they were like, no, but blah, 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 Twitter saying one thing or doing another. Listen, it's one thing to say legally to promise one thing to another, but every corporation, you know, when I'm a company and I care about the environment, do I? Maybe I do compared to my rivals. Maybe I do to a point, but I'm not Captain Fucking Planet. But it was a lot of fun, and I really recommend everyone watch Hoaxed. And the most important thing, just like with Dear Reader, when you are an independent producer, it has to look quality and professional. I was scared to watch it. It was looked quality. It looked professional. Well done. Well executed. And it had a clear, important point that is hard to argue with. One of the things I asked Cernovich about during the Q&A when I was moderating, I said, look, you know, what was the reaction to this movie? He goes, if there was something bad, they wouldn't be able to wait to go out of their way to attack it. He goes, they would call it like alt-right Pizzagate movie. He goes, so right away I had Pizzagate up front. And he goes, you know, no one could say this is an unprofessional piece of shit. And you know this because they're not saying it. There's silence. It's invisible. So that was very interesting to hear from his words. Okay, moving on. Bret Stephens, for those of you who don't know, he's a uniquely horrible person at the New York Times. I do not say this at all regarding his point of view. I don't judge people's personalities based on their point of view. There's plenty of people I don't agree with whose views I who I disagree with on a political level, but who are great, great people. He's really a terrible person. I forget who it was that was on a show with him, the Gutfeld show. It may have been Dave Smith. I don't remember who. But basically, Brett put his hand on the person's knee and just talked down to them completely in this most smug and dismissive way. And I was like, man, he's lucky that wasn't me. And I'm not trying to sound like a badass, but come on, I have the receipts. You've seen me with people who've tried to go toe-to-toe with me in these panels. It does not end well for them, as my Twitter header photo can demonstrate. So he got into it last week. This story went pretty big on Twitter in certain circles, but you probably haven't heard of it. Someone, a guy named Samir, who writes for Splinter, had this big piece, and he goes, this past Thursday night, I sent Brett Stevens an email. He goes, this time around, it was a second email it sent, I was not clear up front as to why I thought he was a poor fit and waste of salary at the New York Times. Yeah, Brett writes for the New York Times. He's kind of their token Republican, but his takes are so bad that he basically puts off everyone. And I don't mean bad in like a Bill Kristol phony sense. It's just like really not good stuff. So the subject line was, you are remarkably dumb. And then he got from Samir, I'm hope pronouncing his name right, to Brett. Again, give your salary to Ahed Tamimi. The general but unspoken rule with baseball umpires is that a player or manager displeased with a call can criticize the official's decision and or judgment as shitty or stupid. But if that player or manager says they're shitty or stupid, that argument will end with an ejection. Stevens appears to adhere to a similar system. Calling his work dog shit was within bounds, but the tamer insult of saying he was remarkably dumb was worth a retort. So Stevens wrote back to him and said, with brilliant wit, and you are... Where's my mic? Correct. And you are... This is a certain personality type that you're all familiar with. And he writes back to Brett, a person who knows whatever you're getting paid could go to someone, anyone, who isn't this clueless on a day-to-day basis. Did you get around to learning what climate change is so you won't fuck up the next time you write about it? And Brett wrote back, have a great night and a nice life. All best, Brett Stevens. And Samir explains, my reference to climate change was because Stevens used his first column at the Times to challenge the legitimacy of climate science, one of many topics he knows very little about, and required a correction for the only sentence in it that contained any actual research. Anyway, I didn't reply, and that was the end of it. About 50 minutes later, I received the following email. I found it to be an illuminating look at what Stevens values in life. And now this is what's fascinating. And this has happened to me on Twitter many times, as you, I'm sure, have seen if you guys follow me on Twitter. You throw out a bum, you walk away, frantic Googling, frantic. And they're hitting you with this, they're hitting you with that. And these midwits think that, oh, I found his Wikipedia. Here's this secret information that no one else knows about, and that's going to be his Achilles heel. Oh, you were born in Ukraine. I bet you're wondering how I found that out. No, it's the first result. And it's the first thing in the first result. Genius. It's the same people who read The New Yorker or The New York Times and like, guys, I heard of this amazing restaurant over the weekend. Yeah, so did everybody else who reads that magazine, that obscure journal called The New Yorker. So Brett Stevens writes back. He goes to Samir. Dear Samir, excuse me. I typed your email address into Google and quickly found out who you are. Then he copies and pastes the LinkedIn. I got to tell you, that's a threat. Because that is very, not. I don't think it's subtle. That is saying, I know who you are and I know who you work for. Do you work here? Why would you? Maybe it's something else. Anyone, this is clearly not someone who's other than thin-skinned. He goes, you may not like what I have to say next, but trust me, It will serve you in good stead in your career and in your life. Please read and reflect. Translation, listen to me, little shit. I'm Brett Stevens. I'm from the New York Times. I know what I'm doing. Now, to be fair, if you are Brett Stevens of the New York Times, you do know what you're doing to some point. You've gotten there. That wasn't an accident. However, I don't think this is meant in kindness after 50 minutes of Frank the Googling. First, because you know why? If you're giving someone career advice, where they work now is of no relevance. And let me read you this advice, because this advice does not matter where Shamir works for. First, don't write rude emails to anyone, least of all complete strangers. If your mother or father saw them, I'm sure they would be embarrassed on your account. This is what's so funny. These midwits are not capable of understanding other people's perspective. Is it really that hard to imagine that Samir has a mother or father who thinks Brett Stevens is awful? Why is that even remotely hard to imagine? Whatever your political philosophy is, it's pretty likely someone has a dad who's rooting you on when you're going after that person. He goes, it would reflect bad. Oh, my God. Look at this. You know, here's the thing. There's certain rules, like in a fist fight, but just in, like, when you're going for insults, there's certain rules that, like, are there that you don't cross and everyone knows about them. One of them is you don't talk about someone's parents unless you want things to get really ugly really fast, or family, right? He goes, it would reflect badly on their parenting, and I'm sure Mr. and Mrs. Khalaf deserve better. Don't fucking talk about my... Yeah, it's not rude. It is completely rude to call someone a piece of shit. There's no question there. It's polite to say, yeah, I'm sure your mom expects better of you. Don't fucking talk like that to me. Or about her. Keep your name out of your mouth, Brett Stevens. He goes, second, life is long and full of unexpected turns. Good advice. Imagine for one instance that one day you're up for a big journalism award. Imagine next that someone you've insulted sits on the prize committee. Or suppose you apply for a dream job at a major publication and your CV gets passed around. It's fine to make unnecessary friends. Unnecessary friends? Holy shit. But it's extremely unwise to make unnecessary enemies. I love the idea that these awards are passed around due strictly through merit. And it's not like if this is someone who hadn't sent the email, Brett would like them and they'd like each other, vice versa, and be fine. Okay. But he's got a good point. I agree that it doesn't make a point to make unnecessary enemies. Because at the end of the day, to use a terrible expression, if you're emailing Brett Stevens, hey, you're a piece of shit, what are you accomplishing? If someone tells me that on Twitter, even if they're right, it's not going to register with me because I don't know you. Third, don't presume that people whose views you don't like are dumb. True. Great point. That is true. I see that you have a journalism degree from the University of New Hampshire and have written for Deadspin and Hustler magazine. These are worthy accomplishments. No. You didn't end on Hustler and say it's a worthy accomplishment. You're saying that sarcastically. They are not so worthy, however, as to entitle you to call anyone dumb. The idea that you need a credential to call a stupid person dumb is false. You don't have to have gone to culinary school to go to a restaurant and say, the service here was poor, my food was cold, and it was overpriced. Now, you would not be as... He's not saying, hey, Brett Stevens, in this article, blah, blah. He just said, you're terrible. It's probably true. It's possibly true. Excuse me. Fourth, life gets better when you try to see the best in people and engage them in an inquiring and positive spirit. Nothing says positivity like, I'm sure your mom would be embarrassed about you. Cynicism is for losers, and so is snark. Okay. Jon Stewart isn't a loser. Since you took the trouble to find my email... Oh, yeah, it's really hard. I'm not in front of a computer. Can you Google brett.stevens@nytimes.com? I'm guessing it's going to be the one. You have to put quotes around it to find the research. Let me guess. Took the time. He went to journalism school. The guy went to journalism school. You're telling me he can't find Brett Stevens' email address? Took the time. You had a good opportunity to start a dialogue with me about any subject of your choosing, including climate change or the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Instead, you performed the digital equivalent of sticking your penis out of your trousers. This is very bad and embarrassing. Embarrassing for whom? Maybe if you're not well hung. Because for now, you have so little to show, intellectually, professionally speaking. He just said there were all these accomplishments that he should be proud of. Now he's nothing to show for himself? Okay. Fifth, and this is, oh my God. Man, he loves himself. Is that it? It doesn't come up right away? If it doesn't come up right away, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's the first choice.
It's the first choice. Yeah. Okay. Where's my journalism degree? I want that hat with the little thing that says, what does that say, news or scoop? Fifth, with the grace of God, you will one day be a middle-aged man with a successful career and a contented family life. That means he's not getting laid. That's what I'm guessing. I'm reading between these lines. Try your best to treat everyone with kindness, including young men with much to learn in life. Best wishes, Brett Steven. What a passive-aggressive cunt. What a passive-aggressive cunt. He goes, P.S., it gets better. I'm a national judge of the Livingston Award and have chaired 2 Pulitzer juries. But don't worry, I'm ethical. If your name ever came up before me, I'd recuse myself. Don't you know who I am? I've chaired 2 Pulitzer juries, and I'm ethical. You're eating raw fish. And this is Samir's response. Amazing. Is that the most reporting you've done this year? Now that's a mic drop. Now that's a fucking mic drop. That is a mic drop. That is great. That is funny. Fuck yeah. I chose to email you so that there could be a direct message with no interference or distraction from the Twitter mob, which you bemoan. Flattering. Flattening? Did it say flattening?
Yeah.
Flattening why I think you're dumb to a view I don't like would not do your body of work justice. What? Oh, he's using the word loosely. Flattening why I think you're dumb to a view I don't like would not do your body of work justice. Comparing, he means. You preach about seeing the best in people and not jumping to conclusions, and yet you'll take no hesitation to calling Palestinians bloodthirsty psychos or write about the, quote, disease of the Arab mind. Typical, you're thinking at this point, these quotes have been thrown around in my face many times before. I'm sure they have. That doesn't make them any less racist. All right. It was funnier before. If you'd like to know what in particular inspired me to reach out, though, it was your continued connection between Bernie Sanders and Benito Mussolini, combined with your, which is not a hard comparison to make, combined with your lack of motivation to do the lightest of research before you shared it with the world. Ahmed Tamimi wouldn't have been so sloppy with the same tools at your disposal, which is why I suggest her as a replacement. And he goes, your advice is smug and patronizing. My Arab parents would also find you clueless if they knew who you were. See, it's a very simple person who thinks that someone's ignorance of something is a comment on the thing which he's ignorant of. So just because his parents don't know who he is, he works at the New York Times. So that's on the parents, not on Brett. He goes, and even if they didn't know who he is, doesn't make his views any less legitimate in any way. It's nice to get a peek at how the sausage is made when it comes to judging awards, though, so I appreciate that. I'd rather live with the consequences of angering someone who fetishizes his accolades and status than live with the guilt of beating the drum for the Iraq war. This is great stuff. This is great stuff. And Brett writes back at 1 a.m., Dear Samir, my advice is wise and well-meant. I really do wish you the best of luck. You'll need it. Oh, yeah. That's not patronizing, condescending. I stand by my original remark and do hope New York Times editorial page editor James Bennett gets in touch. This is Samir talking with Ahmed Tamimi to gauge her interest. Oh, my God. This is such good stuff. This is such good stuff. Okay. Let's go ahead to this video. So one of the things that some of the MAGA types have been losing their minds over is that Rand Paul, among others, is does not view President Trump's use of an emergency declaration to build the wall as constitutional. They regard it as ruled by fiat. They're saying this is a legislative process that is not the function of the executive branch, and it was a problem when Obama did it. It's a problem when Trump does it. And now they're like, oh, you're being disloyal. Someone accused him of virtue signaling. It's like, if you're actually obstructing something, that's not signaling, that's doing it. And Justin Amash, who is congressman, who's one of the like three libertarians in Congress, just as many as there are Muslims, but this is how the libertarians are going to win. He had this clip to say. It's kind of interesting. Let's watch. With Jake Tapper.
President 100%, Republican Congressman Justin Amash of Michigan, also a member of the House Oversight Committee. Congressman, thanks for joining us. You just heard Senator Kennedy explain why he thinks Republicans should support the president's national emergency. You were only one of 13 of the nearly 200 Republicans in the House who opposed the emergency. What's your response?
Well, thanks, Jake, for having me on. We have a system of separation of powers under our Constitution.
Wait, pause this. You know what's interesting? I don't watch Jake Tapper. I don't watch any cable news. I don't have a TV. That's not make me a better person. I would bet good money that Justin Amash is not a regular in Jake Tapper's show. But as soon as Justin Amash disagrees with the president, hey, when can we have you on? Go ahead.
The legislative branch, Congress, handles legislative powers. And this is something that we've had going through Congress for the past several years. There's been discussions about...
Why is he dressed like he's a mortician? Like, what is going on?
It's that, like, blood wine red tie.
Is that red?
It's like a maroon, yeah.
It's so dark with that suit and that hair and the white shirt. Like, get a pattern, something, anything. He doesn't have to dress like me, but, I mean, get a American flag lapel pin or some kind of, you know, symbol, and then those people will be loyal to you, like some charity that no one's heard of. Come on, Justin. Get it together. Okay, go ahead.
Out. A border wall or fencing. We've passed appropriations bills. The president has signed the bills. He hasn't vetoed the bills. So if he wanted to say that there was a crisis, he could have vetoed the legislation. He's never vetoed appropriations legislation. And now he wants to declare an emergency to do something that Congress has already debated and discussed.
You've already heard Senator Kennedy say this, and President Trump has said this many times, that there is a, quote, national security crisis on the border. Is that wrong?
Pause it. I think you know what else? Here's something that I don't know what he's going to say. If something is a ongoing crisis, I am sure that is not legally the same thing as an emergency. That's the problem with having these words out there. In the same way that, like, was it RICO predicate, the mob? Very quickly, everyone becomes a mobster, right? Intent to distribute. Someone who has a lot of drugs at their house, now they're a drug dealer because you obviously aren't going to use all these drugs for yourself and your friends. So when you have something that is a problem and an ongoing problem for a long amount of time, that doesn't mean it's an emergency and you throw the law out the window. It can mean that, but these are not synonymous concepts. Go ahead.
There's a fair debate that there are
Wait. And one more thing. One more thing. There's no dispute that the biggest issue with immigration, and specifically illegal immigration, are people coming here from overseas and overstaying their visas and having anchor babes, things like that. But so even if the wall immediately ended all immigration, legal and illegal, from Mexico, you are still going to have an illegal immigration problem with people overstaying their visas and all the people who are here. So if this issue is an emergency, this wall is we need a roof. Go ahead.
Some people would call it a crisis, but that has to go through Congress. So we have a legislative branch, Congress, that handles these issues, and the president doesn't get to decide that he can override Congress simply because Congress doesn't do what he wants. I know that there are a lot of people in the country who agree with the president, and that's why we have Congress, so we can debate these issues. And if there were an emergency in the sense that the president is describing, there would be a lot more consensus. When a house is on fire, nobody's debating whether they should go in to save people or whether they should put out the fire. Everyone understands that's an emergency. The fact that there's a debate going on here and there's not consensus indicates it's not an emergency in the sense that the president is describing, and he can't just go around Congress.
All right.
You tweeted this.
Well said, Justin. I hate him a little bit less. He follows me on Twitter, and I follow him back. We haven't interacted yet, but that was well said. And again, it's like when they were striking down gay marriage laws, and people were like, oh, you know, Scalia's a homophobe. And it's like, just because he thinks the legal process has to work in a certain way does not mean he's taking a stance on the issue one way or another. And people can't wrap their heads around this. In the same way that you can very easily be pro-choice and say Roe v. Wade is not good law. It's like, oh, blah, blah. People cannot reconcile these two things with approval of process and approval of consequence. And they are different things, especially in a legal system. And on that somber note, I will see you all tomorrow. We got some night rage and we got God's mistakes. And I wish you sweet dreams.